Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm the Dive Mistress.
And in case you're noticing a strange altered voice quality this time, or the shockingly short running time that you're going to see in the streaming window, rather than post yet another advanced show or skip another week, we've decided to, push ahead despite technical glitches and record an all-phone AVOD.
Yes, if you'll recall, we have done this once before. Again, this is entirely my fault. Without going into too much detail, I have experienced some pretty major computer problems at the moment, so hence
as usual, I blame gremlins.
Yeah, gremlins, they're a good scapegoat for this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, they nearly hampered the war effort in Europe.
Nearly. Yes, that's true.
So, you know, I guess now that the war's over, they've moved on to delaying podcasts slightly?
Who can fathom the mind of a gremlin?
I certainly can't. Oh, unless it's that one that talks with the voice of Tony Randall.
Spike?
He often explains his schemes. And no, that was not Spike. It was Brain from Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Oh, I only remember Spike.
Yeah, no, all the original Gremlins didn't talk. The only one who could talk was Tony Randall. It was amazing. And one of the many reasons I love the film Gremlins 2 The New Batch more than Gremlins.
I saw that in theaters.
Really?
Yeah.
You are so lucky. Yeah, I only saw the first one in theaters.
Oh, I never... When I saw Gremlins 2, I hadn't actually seen Gremlins.
Wow, so you were totally lost in the complex plot.
Yeah, it took me years to figure that shit out.
To decompress... and unpack all of that information.
Yes.
All right. I think we actually have random crap to talk about this week, so let's get on top of that.
We do have random crap. Our first bit of random crap. Again, this goes out to our viewers in the UK.
Both of them. Say hi, UK.
All two of you guys. Listen up. On Friday, this Friday, March 25th, a new movie called Wakewood is premiering in theaters, also on demand that Friday, and will be available on DVD the following Monday on the 28th.
Okay, I
wish
question.
I could tell you more about it, but I don't actually know anything about this movie.
Yeah, they sent us, you know, links to the trailers, but we didn't actually watch them. Because,
well, I can't. I have a really good excuse.
She can't, and I didn't bother. Because based on the title, we had no reason to believe that it was about hunting humans, and therefore we're not interested.
Yes, and as we made very clear last week.
We only care about British movies when they're about hunting people.
Yeah.
I, too, have some random crap.
Okay.
I think any longtime listener of the AVOD will remember my obsession with a little show called Prison Break.
Yes, I'm sure. We all remember.
I didn't like Prison Break, but I watched Prison Break.
I tried so hard. I gave it a fair shake, and I couldn't do it. It wasn't going to happen.
What was notable, I think, in my relationship with the show Prison Break was my utter contempt for the main character and his unwillingness to just murder the child molester who kept causing problems for him.
Right.
And the show's insistence that him not murdering the child molester made him a good person, despite the fact that that guy kept going around killing people.
Who played the child molester?
Robert Knepper.
Oh, okay.
Played the character Teabag. He's a wonderful actor. Like, I've liked him in a lot of things, but this was a vile, unpleasant character who just, oh my god. He was a serial killer and a child molester.
He's a child molester called Teabag.
Yeah, exactly, right? He was a loathsome hillbilly rapist stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not, you know, I could not wait to see the end of him, but he didn't even die in the last episode.
Well, shit.
He just ended up back in prison. And yeah, so the terrible show Prison Break couldn't even get that right.
Right.
But
you're not here to talk about Prison Break.
No, I'm not. I'm here to talk about new show, Prison Breakout. That is not the title of the show. The title of the show is called Breakout Kings, and it is a show whose preposterous premise is, what if every week some people broke out of prison and a special team made up of U.S. Marshals and people who had previously broken out of prisons had to track them down?
I understand, hiring a cheater to catch cheaters at a casino. But these people have already broken out of prison. Why do you need the prison breakers to find them?
I know. It's like, well, because they've broken out of prison, maybe they'll know how they'll hide. No, of course they won't. These are just people who broke out of prison once. They can't offer any insight to what that guy will do. It's a terrible show. And it's also based on the premise that people are regularly breaking out of prisons. Which, like, is not... For all of the problems America's prison system have, not being secure enough isn't actually one of them.
Well, I mean, people do break out of prison. It doesn't happen.
No, yes, but I'm saying it almost never for maximum security.
Are they always, like, the worst criminals?
Well, of course they're always the worst criminals. It wouldn't be a show if it was just, like, tax cheats walking away from a country club.
I would love to hear the pitch for that show.
Actually, yeah, now you're making me want to watch it. But I guess the reason, I guess it's important to bring up, the reason I'm bringing this up is, it is from two of the people who gave us the show Prison Break.
Right, yes.
And on, I think, the third episode, character Teabag is returning to break out of prison again and get chased.
Oh, no.
He's returning in another show. Not even the, couldn't have been soon enough cancellation of the show Prison Break has kept this loathsome character down. Well, he is broken out into other media.
Maybe yours is a minority opinion.
Maybe most people love him.
Could be.
And his love of rape and child murder.
Love to hate him, perhaps?
Maybe. But you know what? I will give the show this, and this is what I'll report after that episode airs. Maybe, finally, at long last, he'll get killed.
Well, in the few episodes you have watched, how do they normally resolve the...
Oh, no, I haven't watched the show. I have no interest in watching the show. I only...
Oh, you're complaining about a show you don't even watch.
Well, I understand the pedigree of the show is not promising, and the premise of the show is idiotic. So, no, I did not feel a need to tune in before judging it.
Right, okay. Well, on the subject of teabagging...
Oh, God! How did that become our segue?
I had an opportunity to go and see John Waters speak.
Okay, I take it back. That was an excellent segue.
Yeah, thank you. And I would, if anybody out there ever has a chance to go and see him, go. It doesn't matter what you're doing, cancel your plans. Go and see John Waters. Make the time. If your schedule doesn't allow for it, find a way, because it's worth every minute. It's so good. He's very funny. He's well-spoken. He seems, really affable, very genuine. And it was a great time.
Wow. Yeah. And was it mostly about the movies or his amazing life or his TV shows? Like, what was he talking about?
No, he talks about each of his movies, and then just sort of his own ideas about, life and the world, and then just sort of, anecdotes about, Baltimore and just.
So just a much more erudite and fun Kevin Smith.
I guess I've never seen Kevin Smith, but yes.
Okay.
I'm going to go with yes.
Well, Kevin Smith has some fun stories, but I can't imagine he's in the league of John Waters.
Oh, probably not. I'm sure John Waters has experienced a lot more than Kevin Smith.
Well, natural. Kevin Smith only leaves his basement media room to actually make movies.
He's got funny stories to tell. I mean, it's not a comedy show. I can't really call it that. But it's just, you know.
It's the experience of being with John Waters for, what, 3 hours?
I know, less than that.
Oh, that's too bad.
But still, I mean, a good time was had by all.
Man, see, this sounds like such a great thing that I would love to do. My John Waters story, by comparison, is not an interesting one, which is...
I didn't even know you had a John Waters story.
I know. I'm surprising you with it. The only story I have is that my stepmother went to high school with John Waters.
Really?
Yeah. She's a year older than John Waters, and they went to the same high school.
Wow.
She only remembers him as the weird kid from high school.
That's like my mom's recollections of Dan Aykroyd. He's that weird guy who hung out in the green room.
Oh, God. It's nice when you grew up in the same town as a famous person.
Totally.
All right. Do we have any other random crap?
Yes, you had one more bit of random crap.
Did you write down what it was? Because I forgot.
I did. I wrote down the initials. ATTMOM.
Oh, God, now I'd forgotten because it's so depressing. Benicio Del Toro's At the Mountains of Madness is off again.
Benicio Del Toro?
Oh, my God. Guillermo. Yeah, I can't imagine how I mixed up Benicio Del Toro and Guillermo Del Toro. I cannot imagine how that happened. I'm humiliated.
I wonder what that would look like.
Well, lots of slouching. Slouching and mumbling.
Perhaps, yeah.
I would totally watch that. No, but it's dead again.
See, I called it. Did I not?
You
call
did,
it?
But I mean, the fact that James Cameron was producing it and he had just had, like, the most successful movie of all time. And then, like, 2 months later, he's like, I'm going to produce At the Mountains of Madness for popular director Guillermo del Toro. And I'm like, I thought that finally would get it off the ground. But no, not even that could do it. And then the unfortunate coincidence was that he announced his next project when it was being canceled, which was Pacific Rim, the story of a rift opening up in the ocean next to Japan, and monsters come out and destroy Japan. And then Japanese people have to come back from, you know, elsewhere with giant robots to fight them.
Are you kidding me?
And that all that news came out the Friday before the tsunami.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was some pretty bad timing for Guillermo del Toro.
Or James Cameron. Wait, who was producing Pacific Rim?
I don't know. I don't think James Cameron was involved with that one.
Oh, no?
No.
See, I knew it. I looked into the future, and I said it was going to happen. You didn't believe me.
I didn't believe you, and I was wrong to not believe you, and I apologize for not believing
you. Let this be a lesson to all. The Dive Mistress can see into the future.
Yeah, you've proved that pretty significantly. So, I think that's all our random crap.
That's all our random crap, yeah.
Okay, so let's get on to the brief movie discussion we wanted to engage in.
Yes, we only have two movies to discuss this evening due to the aforementioned technical issues. Our first movie is called Summer's Moon, and it's weird how it happens that we're talking about this movie. We were on the phone yesterday having a conversation, as we were wont to do. And I mentioned that I'd watched this terrible movie, and I couldn't even sit through the whole thing. I had to turn it off. If you know me, this is a big deal that I shut off a movie that I've put in the
movie. Never walk out of a movie. It's weird.
I've never walked out of a movie theater. I came very close one time.
Which was?
House of the Dead. I would have stranded you at the theater had I left.
Yeah, that's true.
And I still probably should have just walked out and spent the rest of the hour just sitting, staring at the wall. It would have been a more productive use of my time, I think.
Although, in my defense, we had paid to see, like, the rundown and just snuck into House of the Dead, so.
No, it was the Lady Killers.
It was the Lady Killers?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Anyway, the point is, I shut off Summer's Moon because I couldn't bear to watch it. And then I was complaining at you very loudly. And you were like, oh, shit, I just saw that movie. It's a weird, you know, stars aligned. I guess it was that super moon on Saturday night.
I know. It caused everything to exactly coincide the way fate required it to.
Right. So I can't even really synopsize this movie. This girl, she's hitchhiking into this small town to find her father, whom she doesn't know. She gets picked up by this guy who then kidnaps her and ties her up in the basement. And he's, you know, I guess this sort of serial killer who collects women. And then that's about as far as I got.
And what's funny about this movie is that I only watched it because I know the producers and I know one of the actors who's in it. He's the guy who tries to rape the main character in a car at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, really? You know that guy?
I know that guy. Yeah.
No, he doesn't try to rape her.
Whatever. He tries
to. It's not important. It's not important.
It's not important, the difference between trying to rape her and trying to extort sexual favors in exchange for a ride. I consider that essentially the same thing. But you know what? You want to argue the point? Be my guest.
No, it's fine. I really don't want to have that conversation.
Good. Because I didn't even think I was going to get called on that. But yeah, I know that guy. He's actually a very funny person in real life. No, I've only actually, other than that, seen him in comedy roles. So I think of him as funny, and I thought it was so weird to see him in this. But yeah, I know the people who produced it, and I know that guy, so I had watched it for that reason, and I didn't know he was only in, you know, three shots, so kind of a disappointment there. But the film has a couple of twists. None of them are good, and I want to stress, the Dive Mistress was correct to turn this movie off. It is not a high-quality movie. But one of the, like, It does, I wanted to talk about it mostly because it does such an awful job of telegraphing its twists, because right at the beginning of the movie, we're introduced to this serial killer who's just murdered a whore, and he's played by a popular Canadian actor who's a favorite actor of mine, whose name I can never remember.
I never got that far, so I can't tell you who it is.
No, it's the first shot of the movie.
I don't remember.
Okay, there's a dead whore in a bed, and he's lying.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember the guy.
Okay, well, the point is, he's a beloved character actor. It's not important who he is. But anyway, you see him in the movie, and he's talking about family and blah, 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 blah. So then we see her, and she's looking for her father. And she goes to this bar in the small town where the father supposedly lives. And this is where she gets picked up by the serial killer. And for some reason, the way she thinks she's going to find her father is asking if this bar is the kind of place that a bunch of guys in their 60s might hang out. The character, Summer, has a picture of her father with her. But it doesn't occur to her to show this to anyone. Mm-hmm. Because that would make us, the audience, realize that her dad is the serial killer from the beginning, and it would make the serial killer who picks her up realize that the woman he's about to kidnap and, you know, tie to a garden he wants her to tend and rape is his half-sister.
Right.
So all of the icky, creepy twists would be ruined for everybody if the character just did what anyone in that situation would do, which is take out a picture and say, do you know this guy?
Oh my god.
And it's like the awkwardness with which she avoids just taking out this picture, because she could just not have the picture, but then there's no way for later in the film the guy to find out that it's his half-sister. So
right.
Just from a writing standpoint, it makes no sense.
See, I never even got that far.
Yeah, you really checked out early.
I did. I checked out really early.
Because there's this whole subplot about the last girl he kidnapped and her father looking for her that, you know, just kind of meanders along at the side of the movie.
And that's kind of like the whole, you know, the first 2 minutes of the movie, which is all I saw. It's taken up with that. And, you know, this newly released ex-con is looking for his daughter who's gone missing, and it turns out that she's also tied up in the basement of the serial killer. But it was progressing so slowly. The writing was pretty bad.
Never has a 90-minute movie seemed so long.
I couldn't do it. There's also, the sound is really strange, and that was kind of bothering me. I was also in a bad mood to begin with, so maybe not the best choice.
No, but then again, when your computer breaks down and you just have what Netflix has actually mailed you, it's not like you have a lot of choices in what to watch.
No, because of course I'm on the cheapest plan, right? Because I'm Tilt Cheapskate. And I had read a favorable review of Summer's Moon ages ago, probably like, I don't know, at least half a year ago by now.
Do you remember who by? Because they were wrong.
I would add it to my queue when it arrived, and it just sat around for like a good month.
Oh.
I didn't see it. It wasn't.
It was not worth it.
Grabbing me.
Oh, be honest. It wasn't worth your time. You don't have to beat around the bush.
It wasn't my time, and I had nothing. There was nothing else I could do with my time. My computer was broken.
So you couldn't even work. And because you're a computer person, you don't own any books. So staring at the wall.
I did read.
For the record, I think with my Kindle, I read. If the AVOD wants to get one thing across this week, it's staring at a wall is a better use of your time than watching Summer's Moon. I just want to take this moment to thank gosh that the producers I know don't know that I do this podcast. Because this would be a really stupid thing to say if they knew about it.
I know, you probably should have said that out loud. The other kind of mind-blowing thing about this movie is that it's directed by Lee DeMarbray, and granted, I've only seen 1.5 of his films.
Yeah.
But he strikes me as being a rather... Well, maybe not manic might be the wrong word, but I'm going to use it anyway. A manic personality.
Oh, yeah.
These movies are crazy. They're off the wall. And they just kind of, you know, it's go, go, go.
I honestly don't know the story of how this movie happened. Like I said, I know some people. Merman knows Lee DeMarbara, and they've never talked about it. But I got the impression watching it that it was there at, like, these Ottawa people's attempt to try to do a mainstream movie instead of the normally crazy movies he makes that, you know, have fun niche appeal but don't really cross over.
Right.
And I think it was just a simple matter of them trying to do something more mainstream than they normally did and it not going well. Because immediately after, he went right back to Smash Cut.
Right. It's paced so slowly. I think that's what got to me most of all. I didn't even have time to kind of get into how awful the script was. It was just...
Yeah, it's not a good script, and it's just achingly slowly paced. So, those are all the nails in the coffin you need. Oh, and there's no nudity, so take that, people who...
Well, it's not really what I am watching, but...
I know it's not what you're watching, but I'm talking to the genre fan in the audience. Who maybe values nudity more highly than the dive mistress.
That's true. I'm sorry to exclude you.
Okay. Hey, speaking of nudity. No, we're not speaking of nudity.
Is that the segue into the next movie?
I was going to segue, but it's not even an accurate segue.
So, well, there's a little bit of nudity.
There is, but it's not like enough that would be a good segue.
No, you're right.
Okay, so sign us up for the next movie, Dive Mistress.
Right, our next and final movie of the evening is The Serpent and the Rainbow. And I'll tell a little story. I heard about this movie very, very long time ago. I was a little kid. I would see the box at the video store.
Terrifying video box.
And I was always very curious, but not... brave enough, I guess, to rent it, and then I heard stories that it was weird and it was scary, and I guess my imagination probably went to town, and I sort of built it up in my mind as being this really terrifying movie.
Like me and Friday the 13th.
Yeah, exactly. And then, where the hell was I? Like, I don't know, maybe a year ago, I was probably at, like, I don't know, Big Lots or someplace like that. And it was the Wes Craven collection, this, you know, 3-movie DVD box set.
Vampire in Brooklyn, Music of the Heart, Serpent in the Rainbow.
$6. And on it was Serpent in the Rainbow.
Yeah.
Yes, Score Now's the Opportunity. Shocker. And I've been curious about that one for a while. And People Under the Stairs, which I absolutely love.
Okay, People Under the Stairs. I always make a lot of jokes about, you know, Wes Craven being a hack. But while he's made a lot of really bad movies, you know, and I think at best he's a serviceable director, like, there are a couple of movies out there of his that I just adore, and two of them are Shocker and People Under the Stairs.
I know a lot of people, for no reason, no good reason, really enjoy People Under the Stairs.
I know. It's like, and in a way, it's because it's an urban fairy tale, but that's a whole other, you know, we can do a whole show about People Under the Stairs. And, you know,
here to talk about
the poor kid who goes to the ogre's castle to steal his gold.
And rescue the big one. Yeah, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the Rainbow, which is also on that, in that box set that I bought for $6. And so last night, I finally...
Sat down to watch it.
And, it's a story of an anthropologist who goes to Haiti in search of an anesthetic. It's this particular drug mixed by a voodoo witch doctor that, once you ingest it, it's a powder. You take on all the symptoms of death. Your heart rate slows down. You don't breathe. You have sort of deathly pallor about you. And so this big farm company in the States has sent this guy, Bill Pullman, to Haiti to get a sample of the drug. So that
of the zombie dust.
Of the zombie dust so that they can manufacture it as an anesthetic. And this is ethnopharmacology in action. And there is a lot of money in ethnopharmacology. And this is in the 80s, and, you know, this is just sort of kind of new, I guess. Anyway, so Bill Pullman, he goes to Haiti, and he's after the drug, and he's made his contacts, and he's progressing along very nicely. He's going to get his hands on the zombie dust. But in the meantime, he's got this witch doctor who's very opposed to Bill Pullman's presence in Haiti. And he sort of curses him, and that's the most thing I'm going to say, I suppose. It's a movie about voodoo. What do you want?
Well, and the thing is, the one thing that Ivysaurus hasn't mentioned, which isn't a twist at all, so I will just throw it out there. For anyone who knows about what was going on in Haiti in the 80s...
Haitian history, this takes place, it's set on the eve of the Haitian Revolution.
And more to the point, the evil witch doctor, who he has a bit of a problem with, is the head of the Tonton Macoute, which were the death squads that kept the country in line.
Yep.
So, yeah, that obviously creates some conflict.
It does. I don't know why I had built this movie up in my head, but I was, you know, a little girl at the time when I first heard about it. It's a good movie.
It really is.
As scary as I anticipated.
Well, no, I mean, when I was watching it, because I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, when I remember being really freaked out by a lot of the stuff in it, I didn't have the greatest memory of it, and what amazed me when I was watching it is, like, this is just a really solid drama about politics and spiritualism.
It really is, yes.
You know, and there are some,
they really get a great across how awful it must have been to be in Haiti at that time, mm-hmm. and the different cultures and repression versus their indigenous culture. And oh my God, there are some freaky things in this movie, because one of the things that never really gets addressed, they want to use this as a revolutionary anesthetic, right? Because as Paul Guilfoyle, the head of the pharmaceutical company, says, they're losing 50,000 people a year who are allergic to anesthetics and complications from improper anesthetics. So if there was something that was far more foolproof, which supposedly the zombie dust is, that would be great. Except for one thing. The zombie dust makes you have no physical response, but you are completely awake and aware for the entire time.
Yeah, so presumably you would actually be feeling the surgery.
You just wouldn't scream.
You just wouldn't be able to do anything about it.
Which, if anything, you know, is worse than being awake for it.
Yes, and Bill Pullman experiences firsthand when he gets blasted with the zombie just straight alive.
Which, you know, from the minute one of the movie, you know that's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
But I actually got a little freaked out when he was being buried alive. Because the film, and I felt it could have gone longer, they actually have the guts to do the complete black screen and just him screaming. Mm-hmm. And I felt that actually could have gone along a little longer, because it was very effective.
It was.
And what was the other thing I really enjoyed? Oh, yes, the fact that it was made at a time before irony was invented. Because this is a film that, and I'm not going to spoil when or where this happens, in which a character is literally empowered by his spirit totem, a cougar. Mm-hmm. And it's not meant like that could never happen today without it being Will Ferrell making a joke about that.
I think it's actually a jaguar, but whatever.
Oh, sorry, a jaguar. Actually, I was thinking about the cougar. I was actually already thinking about Will Ferrell and the cougar in Talladega Nights. So,
well, that's. I mean, on the topic of spirit animals, I think what I really enjoyed about the movie was that it doesn't come down on one side or the other about the spiritualism and whether or not, you know, there really is magic in the world, and whether these voodoo priests and priestesses are in fact magical beings or can manipulate magic.
Yeah, because everything Bill Pullman sees that's freaky, he sees when he is in a questionable mental state, and he's dealing with people who regularly poison other people with both psychotropic poisons and just ones to murder you.
Yeah.
So, in that consideration, like, plenty of people are killed through what seems like dark magic, but it could easily just be poison.
It's poisoning. And he says that at one point, too.
Yeah, and on a number of occasions in the movie, Bill Pullman is essentially on mind-altering drugs. And this
it's
actually
true.
And, oh, man, and how great was that rolling hallway scene?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, my God, that was just freaky. And if you watch the movie, you'll know what we're talking about. It's a great effect. Done, you know, I'm sure the same way they did it in Inception.
Yeah.
You know,
also, you know, like some moments of sort of classic Wes Craven horror mindfucks.
Oh, right? Yeah.
There are a few of those in there.
Oh, God, yeah. And what was the, there was actually something I really enjoyed deep in the movie, which was, when Bill Pullman and Paul Winfield, who plays the friendly voodoo priest, or the wonderful moment of, don't worry, I'm here to help you, and then something happens like 1 second later. But again, I don't want to spoil it, but it's actually pretty fantastic. And works as just a wonderful surprise. But yeah, like, this is just another one of those Wes Craven movies that makes me wish Wes Craven had access to better scripts.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a well-made movie.
And he's a competent filmmaker who can get the job done. It's just, so often he gets saddled with terrible stories. But then I think, you know, every time a Wes Craven movie, I always blame Wes Craven for his many, many hacky movies. But if you think about it, it's like, it's always the story I'm complaining about. Mm-hmm. It's just surprisingly often he wrote that story.
Well, this one is loosely based on a true story.
Yeah, and I assume very loosely based. I don't know the true story at all.
Well, but here's another story. I was in an anthropology class, and we were, I wish I could remember more details about this, but we were talking about voodoo.
Right.
And our professor, he told a story about this guy who'd gone to Haiti, and he was an ethnopharmacologist, blah, 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 you know, and all this weird shit happened. He came back and he wrote his memoirs, and it's The Serpent in the Rainbow.
Oh.
So, I mean, there was this anthropologist, and he went to Haiti, and he did experience the voodoo there, and when he came back home, he did, in fact, write his memoirs. I mean, his book is called The Serpent in the Rainbow.
Okay, so this is a licensed adaptation of that book. I didn't read the credits that carefully.
The disclaimer, of course, in the credits at the end of the movie are that, you know, the fact that this guy went to Haiti and wrote down his memoirs, that's all true. Everything else is made up. So I don't know, you know, if the zombie dust, if that's actually, you know, what he was there for.
It kind of makes me want to grab the book, though.
Yeah, but the voodoo stuff, of course, is always very interesting.
And it was interesting, especially when we see how they make zombie dust, which is just far too freaky.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's this very long of all process. You know, and indigenous magics usually are, so.
Yeah, but the idea of working with those materials for 3 days straight, wow.
That freaked me out a little bit.
It did freak me out a little bit, especially one part that I'm not going to spoil.
Well, this is a powder that does make you appear to be dead.
Oh, no, no. Obviously, it's going to have to be spooky the way you make it. But it's like, to make the medicine, we need to rob a grave. Oh, okay.
That's step one.
Yeah, that's just the first step. Okay, here's my question, because if I'm just completely backwards on this, right? Mm-hmm. Right at the beginning, they explain that the title, The Serpent and the Rainbow, refers to how in voodoo, Earth is represented by a serpent and heaven is represented by a rainbow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, am I remembering this really badly? Because the second I heard that, and I like that they mentioned the thing that, you know, people often forget about voodoo, which is that it's basically just Catholicism, but they take, saint worship way more seriously than Catholics do.
Well, voodoo, I think, if I remember correctly, it's a bit of a pastiche. So indigenous cultures from Africa, these people were brought over to the Caribbean and North America and Catholicized along the way.
Yeah.
And so if you have the saint worship of Catholicism, which is not unlike the polytheistic religions that these people practice back home.
Exactly. And that's, I guess, what I'm trying to say is that they really, really, they haven't given up on their chanting and summoning of saints, except now they're weird versions of the Catholic saints. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, the Virgin Mary is a mermaid for some reason. But the thing that I thought was so strange was that when I heard The Serpent and the Rainbow, and maybe you know more about this than I do, because I guess I should go look it up, but the first thing I thought is, wait a minute, in Norse mythology, isn't the Earth represented by Jörmungandr, the Midgard serpent, and isn't, you know, Asgard a rainbow?
Oh, my God, I don't know.
Okay.
I am totally the wrong person to ask. I know very little about Norse mythology.
Okay, because it's just the second I heard Earth being a serpent and heaven being a rainbow, I swear that's also Norse mythology. And I thought
it's entirely possible. But, I mean, as you know, it's the case with a lot of early religions. I mean, they all come out of a base root of animism.
And really, what would you, honestly, you see a rainbow, of course you're going to think it's magic. No matter where you live in the world.
I'm not here to talk about world religion. But.
No, of course not. Of course not. Even though we're talking about a movie about voodoo, I probably shouldn't have tried to turn this into a conversation about world religion. And I want to apologize for that one and just get back to how great is it that this is a movie that, you know, features, you know, third world torture chambers without leaving you feeling bad about it.
Oh my God, that was a really... I watch a lot of extremely violent movies, but the torture scene in this movie
is singularly,
you know, as I guess tame as it is more cringe-inducing.
Oh, I know.
Than a lot of the other shit that I've seen.
I know, because, and I'm gonna say it, it's what a fantastic job Zakes Mulcahy does as the head of the secret police. He is creepy as hell.
He is. He's a fantastic actor. And I think the whole way the scene is set up.
Yeah.
It just really makes you scared for Bill Pullman.
Oh, no, it really does. Because you just feel like there's no way Bill Pullman's getting out of this okay. And he doesn't. The thing that I found so funny about it is that, you know, in scenes like that, that usually don't get the kind of build-up you got to that scene because they spend so much time introducing the chief of police of the secret police character before we see him in his milieu. You know, because we see him at a party and then he calls Bill Pullman into his office to nicely suggest that he should leave Haiti. And we know that there's something bad behind his threats, and because, you know, if you know anything about Haiti, you kind of know what it is, but...
Yeah.
Oh, God, when it actually happens, it is the freakiest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, I had a... Honestly, like, this is one of my... This will probably be... I'm going to have to watch it a couple of more times just to make sure, but this is probably going to be added to my list of favorite Wes Craven movies.
Yeah.
You know, because I really enjoyed the heck out of this, and I think we can wholeheartedly recommend it as much as we wholeheartedly disrecommended Summer's Moon. That's right. I'm going to offer the greatest recommendation the AVOD can offer. This movie is better than staring at a blank wall.
It certainly is with that, yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. So I think it's time now to move on to Narcissism Watch. Mm-hmm. Mistress, anything to be narcissistic about?
I have no reason to be narcissistic this week.
Well, maybe when you get your computer back, huh?
Yes. Maybe when my life gets back on track.
I know. I, by comparison, you know, go check out my Criminal Minds posts. I do two a week now because of Criminal Minds suspect behavior. Hilariously, the fifth episode was actually the pilot.
Oh.
Yeah, they had bumped the pilot back because it was not a very good episode, so they had to awkwardly re-edit it to cut out the scene where Janine Garofalo joined the team.
Oh.
So it's pretty clear that she doesn't know any of them, but they kind of tried to cut around that.
Right. Weird.
It was super weird. And what was the other? Oh, yeah. And let's see. Oh, yeah. I found out through Google tracking that the vast majority of my – well, not vast majority, but we always knew that the vast majority of my Criminal Minds readers were in America. But a weirdly high percentage of them are in North Carolina, so...
North Carolina loves Criminal Minds.
To all those North Carolinians out there enjoying my reviews of Criminal Minds, thanks a bunch, and I hope you see you back this weekend for... I honestly have no idea what's going up this week. I post them so far in advance. But,
oh, so anticlimactic.
I know, but you know, episode 6 of Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior this Saturday. Check it out. I would ask you what the poll results are, but you don't have a computer, so...
I can't tell you because I don't know.
So, you know, look further down on the page where you listened to this because the results are there.
You'll find out eventually.
Exactly. Next time, if, you know, all goes according to plan, we'll be taking a look at the Red Riding Trilogy.
Yes.
Which I actually managed to watch because I thought we were going to be doing it this week.
I tried.
She did try. I got to give her that. But the point is, we're going to be checking that out. So obviously meet us back here for that. And until then, if you want to read reviews of Criminal Minds episodes, swing on over by Varjalon.com.
If you want to browse my archives, feel free to do so. At zombus.net, you can, of course, keep track of the AVOD at the AVOD blog at the AVOD.blogspot.com, and you can always send us an email at the AVOD@gmail.com.
Fantastic. All right, so until next time, I'm Count Varjalon.
I'm a guy.
Have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.